Well, I just have to gather myself for a minute and tell you how big a pleasure it is to be introduced like that and to be here today. Really check in with a lot of gratitude for this congregation, for this community, for the opportunity to talk to you about some things I notice in the world that I think are central to the lives of a lot of people here already. I don't know if preaching to the choir is exactly the right expression to use here, but I'm probably going to be doing some of that today. And first, let me just thank you for the invitation to be here. And Diane, you've been marvelous to work with. Thank you so much for making this happen. I do see the reading. Thank you for printing it out and saving me the panic of thinking I should have brought it. It's called The Hidden Agreement. And you know what I think I'd like to do, because I don't really know exactly how long my remarks will take. I think if it's okay, I'd like to start off and then see what our time is like to read this at the end, the Hidden Agreement. I was asked, as Diane and I were talking about today, I was asked to give a talk with a spiritual bent. And that made me pause for a moment. That's not something I'm asked to do every day. It's not exactly in my wheelhouse, I guess. And I thought about, I didn't want to come here under false pretenses. So what I'd like to do is bring your attention to the quotation at the very top of the program, which has become a beacon for my work in the world. And I'll let you decide, maybe towards the end of the talk, whether I filled my mandate of giving a talk with a spiritual bent, if this clears the bar. The quote is from Reverend Howard Thurman, who was a Presbyterian minister who died in his 90s about 15 years ago. He was also a civil rights leader. Howard Thurman said, "Don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and then do that. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive." And you'll find that here. You'll find that at the top of the webpage for Immense Possibilities. You'll find it as my signature if you and I are emailing. And it's found its way into my heart as sort of a beacon for what I do in the world. It's very helpful for me personally to keep it there, because it's quite different from the way I was brought up and the way I was learned to act in the world, which was dominated by the power of reason and logic and debate. That if you come up with sort of the better case or the better argument, you will and should prevail, that reason is all-powerful. And I took that feeling with me into my time in talk radio at earlier, but then at JPR for 10 years. I was really happy to have that platform. And I didn't think about it this way at the time, but looking back, I think the model I was thinking about, this is great. I have a microphone. It reaches quite a few people. I am going to bring people on, guests on, and comment myself and offer really persuasive arguments about the way things should be. And that's going to change the world. I have some pretty strong feelings about a lot of things. Some things seem very obvious to me, almost beyond debate, although they don't turn out to be. Like we shouldn't have a government that's for sale to the highest bidder. And how many of you were walking with me in yellow T-shirts on the 4th of July for Move to Amend? Thank you, John Tyler, for what you've done for that. A very important effort. So that's obvious to me. Looking around the world, the way that other developed countries do health care looks to be almost undeniably much more sensible than the way we do it. That seems undeniable. A number of things like that struck me. Well, you know, if there isn't a large majority for those things, it must be that people don't know about them or haven't heard good enough arguments, and I'll give them good enough arguments on the radio, and we'll turn this thing around. Well, I didn't quite have that much hubris, but that was kind of the idea, the power of the spoken word and argument. And if I didn't persuade people, I went back and rewrote and tried to put it, this was also when I was writing a column, tried to put it a little more persuasively. The problem was I just wasn't being persuasive enough, or I wasn't finding guests who were quite compelling enough. I'll find a more compelling guest. Well, you may have noticed that the tsunami coming out of Southern Oregon to cover the nation with all of these new progressive policies didn't quite develop. So I had to re-examine my thinking about that. And that's about the time I found this Howard Thurman quote. Don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive, and then do that, because what the world needs is people who've come alive. And I started listening, I think, a little harder and with more empathy and more surrender, perhaps, to some of my callers, especially the ones who disagreed with me. Where were they coming from? And though, you know, the medium of talk radio is words, maybe there's music underneath the words I needed to listen to. And as I talked to people and met other people in my, this happened some before in my years as county commissioner when I would travel around the county to more rural, more politically and socially conservative parts of the county than Ashland. What I heard from a lot of people, and I don't want to overgeneralize, but what I heard from quite a few people was a lot of pain in their lives and a lot of disconnection, a lot of isolation, a lack of fellowship. And if they had passions in their past, they had experienced disappointment that had disconnected them from their passion. So they weren't very passionate about very much anymore. Or if they were, it sort of found kind of really negative, hostile channel. And let's face it, it can be very tough living in this society to keep alive, to keep your sense of aliveness. There's so much stimulus that tends to deaden us or make us frightened, which I think is similar, about the scarcity in the world, about how, you know, we fall short, and if we only get a bigger car or a newer whatever, you know, well, that's what we need to be happy. Those messages are constant. And the messages in recent years from some parts of the media about all those evil people out they have to stand up against, those are not enlivening messages. And I came to think that that really is the center of the problem, that my old ideas about logic and reason reigning supreme weren't quite right. And if the people couldn't find some passion and excitement about their lives, something they really wanted to live for, something that brought them alive, it would be unlikely that they would be allies for the kinds of things that many of us want in the world. And if, in fact, they could come alive to some excitement, some passion in their life, they wouldn't need me or anybody else to steer them to the right political views. They would tend to find more generosity, more sense of community, more connection on their own. So I decided that if I wanted to make a contribution, and I do, two things I could do would be the most important, and they're represented by two quotations, really. One, Howard Thurman's, about coming alive, and the other one from St. Francis, about seeking first to be understood before, I'm sorry, the other way around, that's what we usually do. From St. Francis, seeking to understand before we need to be understood. I took that to my heart as well. And I want to talk about what those two mean in my life. First of all came the Howard Thurman quote about coming alive, and that led directly to immense possibilities. When I was in talk radio, I actually started conceiving an idea of what I called IPR, Immense Possibilities Radio. And that came out of my realization that what moved people the most wasn't any smart argument or articulate guess. And occasionally that would move people. People would stop me and say, you know, I never thought about that before hearing your guest on the show. But for the most part, we don't hear somebody speak on issues we've thought about and go, oh, my God, what have I been thinking all these years? I've been completely wrong, and I'm going to turn it around, you know, maybe around the edges. But basically, we already think what we're going to think about those issues. So, but what did seem to transform people was hearing about projects, efforts out in the world that really lined up with what they wanted to see in the world. And more importantly, I think more importantly and more powerfully, being exposed to people who are so passionate about the cause that they believed in, people who have fully come alive. And immense possibilities, the television program that now appears on public TV. And let me stop right here and just ask, how many people have seen an episode of Immense Possibilities? Well, that's about half. I'll give you other half a little bit of slack, and you've got 2 weeks to either watch on public TV on Channel 8 on Friday nights at 8:30. We just moved to Friday nights. Or also, all of our episodes are online. All of our half-hour episodes, 35 of them, are online in an archive at immensepossibilities.org. So the entire idea of Immense Possibilities, in a way, is to stimulate, offer people alternatives, possibilities for coming alive in two ways. One is the content of the show. All of these 35 shows are about some, what I'll call a social invention, something that a person or a group has developed over time that really excites me personally. I feel really privileged to be able to do this show because I get enthused and hopeful and stimulated whenever I go research these and find these people. So they're involved in any number of projects that to me are brilliant and aligned with the forces of compassion and sharing and abundance, and are also practical and are happening in the world. And some of them are so great and so simple that they just kind of boggle the mind. One is Farm to School, some of you may have heard of.
Yeah.
That, yes, yay, Farm to School, yep. Which is getting kids involved in the dirt and in agriculture at a very early age. You know, we have a couple generations of youngsters who, for the most part, have grown up on concrete. And that makes a pretty big difference in your worldview in a lot of ways. So Farm to School has put together some solutions to different problems. Childhood obesity, the separation of the kids from nature, what's going on in our school lunch programs, you know, what food choices, all those kinds of things. And are having doing phenomenal things in the world. As one of them said to me, a kid will eat anything that he or she grows. And that's kind of true. So, I mean, and they're, it always strikes me how simple these ideas are. That's one of them. The car sharing idea is another. We had Ashen Car Share here for a while. It ran into difficulties. But we're going to see more and more and more shared collective use of vehicles in different ways. You know, it's one after another. I really got excited about this young woman, this 21, 22-year-old woman in Michigan, in Detroit, who, out of her compassion for homeless people in the winter, invented a project. She was a design student. She invented a product that is a combination parka sleeping bag, and found a little bit of money for them, made a few by hand, started giving them to homeless people to keep them literally alive during the winter in Detroit. I guess being homeless in Detroit is a little different from being homeless in Ashland during the winter. And now has built a business. She's employing dozens of homeless women to make these bags, these combination bags, just really simple ideas that change not only the realities of life for some people, but the way of thinking about life. So the substance of these ideas, just one after another, can be inspiring. What I'm hoping is that some viewers, and we invite them straight out, we say, if this excites you, if you want to be part of this, here's how you can do that. You can call this person, my guest next to me, tomorrow and get involved with this. And please realize we also have Skype guests who are doing similar work on a national or international level. And we want you to know as a viewer, not only can you take part in this, but you're changing the world because this program is going on in some way all over the country among people who want to make a difference. So that's one way people can come alive, by finding a place to put their energy, an answer to the question, what can I do to make a difference? We hope we've offered 35 answers to that question in 35 episodes. But the other thing that might even be more profound isn't the content, so the energy of the guests. And this I've found again and again and again, that both talk radio and on Immense Possibilities. There are certain people whose energy for life, who have come alive to a level, to a degree, that it's contagious. And my sense is that there are people, there are viewers out there who they probably don't think of it quite this explicitly, but they can feel the joy and passion of my guest for his or her project, and they go, I want some of that feeling in my life too. And that can help them take their first step into civic engagement or activism. And after that, it builds the taste for activism. You know, I always, when I think about this, I think about the movie When Harry Met Sally. And there's a very famous line in that movie where Meg Ryan gets quite excited in a restaurant. I'll put it that way. And when she finishes, a woman at the next table, who turns out to be Rob Reiner, the director's mother, a woman at the next table says, I'll have what she's having. Well, that's what I'm hoping viewers will say. I'll have what that guest is having. So that's the whole purpose possibilities, and I hope you'll, if you haven't tuned in, I hope you will on SOPTV on Friday evenings. We've got a lot of plans to grow and expand. We've been on the air a year now. It's been a good year. There's a lot more we want to do. We urge the support of anybody for whom this seems like a good place to put your energy, this show, showing ourselves, showing our passion for life to each other in very practical ways. I like to think we're stimulating realistic hope in the world, because there's a kind of a shortage of that in some parts. So we'd love your support. Well, starting with watching it, and if you watch it and enjoy it, please tell friends about it and tell Southern Oregon Public Television about it. And we have immense plans for immense possibilities in the future. So let me go back to the other thread that I suggested about how you make a difference in a world that's too full of debate and too full of words and too full of my argument is better than yours and my solution to healthcare is better than yours. Howard Thurman gives us one idea. The other is what strikes me as so simple and so profound that if we could just do this one, everything else would be detail work. We'd get the world that we can envision, the world that we want. And that's what St. Francis said. Seek first to understand before being understood. We know that, and yet I personally find it a little hard to practice when I get excited about things. And what I discovered, you know, what I believe at any rate, is that, I don't know if I can say we're all alike, but the great majority, the vast majority of human beings are alike in a particular sense, and that is a burning need to be seen and heard and understood. And it is that unmet need that is at the cause of so many of our problems. So Reverend Leslie talked earlier about the golden rule. You know, in a way, St. Francis saying is a golden rule. Seek to understand people as you would have people seek to understand you, perhaps. And it's a spiritual way of being, but it also is so completely practical in my view. Because the people out there, you know, we all have a sense, we all know people we don't agree with politically, who we hold to be good people who care about the world. And we get frustrated and, you know, I try and bring a better argument or send them something online. Yeah, read this article, see what you think. Well, you know, consider these statistics, and you can see that I'm right and you're wrong. But I haven't done the thing that opens the door, which is to seek to understand them. And on a very practical level, seeking the world we want, I think this is indispensable. Finding ways, you know, I know personally, and here I'm sort of my own best indicator here. I know perfectly well when it is that challenging arguments, ideas I don't agree with, when I'm listening to them and when I'm not. I listen and I open up and sometimes revise my thinking some, but at least I open up when someone has made me feel heard and understood. And if they don't, I'm not interested. And I think we're kind of all like that. So I would suggest that this is maybe the most practical, maybe St. Francis gave us the most practical piece of advice that there is, that I know, when he said, seek first to understand. And that leads to some work that I've been doing with some of you and others in the community. The UCC churches have gotten involved with this, and that is convening some dialogue between Occupy and Tea Party activists. You'll find one show on immense possibilities that we did on that, which was it's only a half-hour show, and the actual forum that we took it from was an hour and a half, so it's kind of a crunch. But you can see that on Immense Possibilities on the archives. We've had one sort of town hall at the UCC Church in Medford, and we're looking to have others with Occupy and Tea Party folks on the podium and others coming forward to talk about what's important to them. And, you know, I would like to say that in the last 8 months we've resolved our differences and we're all agreed on all kinds of things. There are things we're already agreed on and working together on. There was the first, that we know of, the first jointly sponsored Occupy Tea Party political event in Medford about 4 months ago. There was a demonstration against the National Defense Authorization Act and the aspects of it that allow what some of us think are complete outrageous violations of our civil liberties, and people from the right and left are excited about that. We're sort of exploring with this Move to Amend movement, which, if you haven't heard of it, basically wants to see a U.S. constitutional amendment that makes it clear that corporations are not people and money is not speech. We think that has appeal across the spectrum. But I don't want to gloss over this. There are a lot of differences. There are a lot of social attitudes that play into differences, and we're still exploring this. If you would like to, we're in a planning stage with this, and if it's something you would like to be involved in and maybe volunteer to help get going in some way, I would like to talk to you. And let me, before I close, say one more thing about that, and that is, it doesn't take big venues and it doesn't take elaborately planned events to get people together of different views. And I want to invite you to do something yourself along this line, along the line of seeking to understand and seeing what kind of doors that opened. About 6 years ago, in a newspaper column, I declared a national Take a Blockhead to Lunch month. Wanted to start a Take a Blockhead to Lunch movement. And it's very simple. You identify someone in your life, and like I said before, who you believe really cares about the world and who seems to see politics and issues completely different from you, and you call them and invite them out to lunch or coffee or whatever. It's up to you whether you want to tell them that they're your blockhead that you want to pick up. That can depends on your relationship. You go out, and your only job is to ask questions and pick up the tab. Those are your jobs. And a question, putting a question mark at the end of a sentence doesn't make it a question. You can't possibly believe that nonsense, can you? Is not a question. So you go there with that spirit of inquiry and really trying to understand. And I've done this a few times. I don't find it very easy. And, it, you know, the inside of my mouth starts to bulge, the chewing I've done on it. And by the end, you know, you can ask if you can be the other person's blockhead another time, and they'll take you out depending on how the first one went. But I've done it. Actually, I've been someone's blockhead more than I've taken a blockhead out. People have asked me how effective this was, and I had to say, for me, it's been very effective. I've been taken out to lunch about 30 times in the last year, haven't had to pick up the check. But things happen. You see things in a different way. If you can bring yourself to that frame of mind, and as I say, as a trained debater and someone who was rewarded for trying to be one up on the argument, I found it a very difficult exercise, a very challenging exercise, a worthwhile one. You know, okay, I can sit there and not put in my two cents and just ask questions, but can I fully hear instead of thinking internally about what I'm hearing that's wrong and what I would say if I were talking that day? I find it almost a kind of calisthenic or an exercise for a larger view of the world that makes room for what other people feel. The kind of core question that I would suggest, and we've tried this in any number of venues, including the Tea Party Occupy one. You know, if you start your questions about topical things, you know, what do you think about the war in Afghanistan or the Bush tax cuts or abortion, not much interesting is likely to happen. We've heard all that. The sponsoring question, there are different variations of it, is tell me about an experience in your life that deeply impacted the way you see the world. We've had events where we've done that in small groups, and it is extremely powerful. So you might think about having an event at your house or any number of places, or just one-on-one by taking a blockhead to lunch. So, how's our time, and is there time for that reading or not? Is it 2 pages? Or?
Are you done?
I'm pretty close to done. I do want to say that at the rear of the room is a table with my 3 books, As If We Were Grown-Ups, which politics and how we've been shooting way too low and kind of a vision of a different kind of politics. Forest Blood, which is a novel of the timber wars here over the last 40 years. And Unafraid, a novel of the possible, which talks about a lot of what we've been talking about today in a fictional form that imagines JFK is wounded rather than killed in Dallas and goes on to serve 2 full terms and decides through a personal transformation to see what he can do with his country, which in turn challenges us to see what kind of leadership we're ready for. So those books are back there. I'm asking for the 3 of them all together, $20, which will go straight into supporting Immense Possibilities, if that's the way you'd like to do that. Yes?
I move that you read the reading, and I'm open to debate about that.
Okay. Did you say debate? Discussion. Okay. Yeah.
How's that sound? It's not open to debate. Okay.
Okay, I actually kind of want to read this anyway, so thank you for the suggestion. This is called The Hidden Agreement, and I wrote it for Spirituality and Health magazine. It was just a warm-up question. I was beginning an hour-long live interview with Rabbi Michael Lerner on my daily public radio talk show, The Jefferson Exchange. He had been on the show about a year earlier, so I asked him if any special insights had come to him since then. Michael's life is rich with insight. He is the founder and editor of Tikkun Magazine, rabbi of a large, vibrant congregation in San Francisco, and author of The Politics of Meaning and Spirit Matters, both required reading for anyone serious about social transformation in contemporary America. Shortly after becoming First Lady, Hillary Clinton seized on The Politics of Meaning as a foundational text for the new administration, and the media began to call Michael the White House guru. That lasted until some journalists started quoting from the book, moving the Clintons to say that actually, now that they thought about it, they weren't really that interested in Michael and his ideas after all. Well, in fact, yes, the rabbi answered. I've been talking with an awful lot of people since Spirit Matters came out, all kinds of different people from different cultures, generations, ethnic groups, and income groups, parts of the country, a really wide range. And I'm hearing the same 2 things from just about everyone I have a real conversation with, the same 2 things everywhere from everyone. Here he paused with a small smile. The first one is that people want a society different from the one we have. They want a community, a nation, an economy, a world based more on the values of community, generosity, compassion, and love, less on hierarchy, acquisition, and win-lose competition. That's the first thing. The second thing is this. They think they are alone. They think they're the only ones who feel that way. They look around them and they see no reflection or support of the values they want, so they decide they're just unrealistic and that they have to just get a grip and adjust to the world as it really is. And so the world goes. In the days and weeks that followed, I heard myself repeating the rabbi's words whenever anyone talked about changing public consciousness or, less ambitiously, about nudging public opinion on a particular issue. Almost everyone hearing the premise would pause, and I imagine that I could hear their thoughts move from the concept to the big question, What if it's true? What if most Americans really do share a longing for values that connect and nurture people? What if everything we see to the contrary, the he who dies with the most toys vector that seems to drive the economy and society, the staggering levels of individual consumption, the fearful arguments and political struggles that make up every day's news, what if it's all a thin layer of mental noise, a story that we accept as real just because, out of unthinking habit, we expect it to be? Could we be creating and projecting into the future, for no reason at all, a world that's colder, lonelier, grimmer, and more hollow than anyone wants? We could be. And if we are, the task of shifting the nation and the world toward peace and sustainable abundance becomes a lot easier. It's not the immense, some would say impossible, task of changing the consciousness and values of hundreds of millions of people. Instead, it's shining light and drawing to the surface values we already have. That doesn't make the task easy. The mainstream cultural messages that lure us to consume and conform and that ridicule sacred non-material thinking are not there by accident. They won't quietly fade away the first time a few people shout that the emperor has no clothes. Nevertheless, the answer to the rabbi's challenge matters. It would be one thing to say at the end of our days, we couldn't do much because our values and beliefs were too different from the core values of the vast American majority. We just were not born at the time. But that would be a lot more bearable than figuring out too late that we were born at just the right time, that we had all the human raw material for social transformation we needed and didn't know what to do with it. We didn't even know we had it. Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you.